Attention, you are conducting a broadcast in direct violation of FCC Rule 27. Pull over.
I'm not going down without a fight! I'm the voice of the real man!
Hate when that happens, don't you? Talk about a maydays. Hey, welcome aboard the Amy Beth Arkley Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are you? Hope you're having a good week. Well, got lots to talk about in our free-flow pop culture convo. Toronto's embattled Rob Ford, the mayor up there, is headed to rehab, but he's still running for re-election. Mm-hmm. And out of the courtroom and into the studio, apparently, married embattled singer-songwriters Paul Simon and Edie Brickell, they released a duet yesterday. It's an acoustic beauty. We'll sample it, actually, for you. We'll talk Tony nominations, and you want to hit the road again in Willie Nelson's tour bus? It's for sale. Oh, and no extra charge for the smell. You can't get rid of it anyway. We'll do the Inspiration to Action Challenge shout-outs, and you on the line as time permits, 347-857-4505. Should you be listening live on Friday, May 2nd, 9 a.m. out west, 11 central, noon here in the east. Easier still, 24/7 at Twitter, at AB Wright. The show today being brought to you in part by Time Warner Cable Movies on Demand. Watch what you want when you want to watch it. And by Area Las Vegas Resort and Casino. That's the way we Vegas. First, though, it's the cusp of the weekend, time to kick back, enjoy some music, and meet a musician, a singer, songwriter, performer who has been in the music biz for decades in one way or another. Jerry Boutta is reinventing himself, remastering old works in a new way. We'll talk to him about his creative journey and inspirations, but first let's sample one of his sounds. This one's called Today, Tomorrow, and Yesterday. It's Jerry Boutta opening up the Friday edition of the ABC Arkawi Show. Amy Beth Arkley Show today, tomorrow, and yesterday. And let's meet the man behind the great song and many others. Hey, Jerry, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
Appreciate it. Now, you're something of a musical pack rat, I guess, because that song, among others in your new collection, Dark Waters, was they were all originally recorded and put on the cassette back in the 80s. You kind of stashed it away, revisited it, and kind of remastered them. Is that correct?
Yeah, really. That's the truth. We the lyrics of that entire album were written by my friend Randy McQuilkin, and we collaborated on this thing on four-track tape, believe it or not, back in the days when that's what you had to do, you know. We put it out and put it together and put it away, basically, because the internet didn't really exist, and you couldn't really do anything with it, you know. I mean, unless you got a lawyer and an agent, and it was a lot of hard work, you know, to even think about getting something out there. But we put it together, and then, you know, listened to it a bunch of times over the, you know, for a few years, and then kind of like it faded away, and literally it got forgotten in a box. So I brought it back out of my box and looked at the tapes and said, hey, this would be really good to redo. So I redid the whole thing from scratch.
Well, that's so interesting. So it pays to save things. Sometimes it pays to be a pack rat. Sometimes not, but sometimes it does. And you said you revisited it, and you make a lot of changes to it. Is it just the clarity of the sound, or were there some dramatic changes to this collection?
Oh, the quality. I mean, it's all done in 64-bit digital recording with Cubase for the techies out there. But the original four track is really hard to listen to now. You know, it's the quality is so poor. I just had to literally reverse engineer it by listening to everything and like reprogram all the drums and relearn all the guitar parts and relearn all the keyboard parts and, you know, all that. So it was quite a process. It took quite a while. And I redid it like several times with new instruments over a couple of year period until I got it to where I wanted it. So
it's not really changing it too much.
It's pretty much holding on to the original intent and the original sound. I did put a couple of little new things in there with the piano and heartbeat, and that didn't exist in the original. And then the kind of mechanized sound that opens up Wayward Child, that's all brand new. So
fascinating process. You've had an interesting career because you've been kicking around for a couple of decades now, on and off in the music business, various functions, worked with different bands. Talk a little bit about your journey. How did it start for you? What were your earliest inspirations and influences?
Early inspirations. Well, I got really, you know, you were talking about Jethro Tull, The Who, Pink Floyd, you know, bands like that, The Kinks, you know, just a lot of the great, you know, what we consider like the great old bands, you know, Led Zeppelin. Those were really the bands that I grew up with and listened to a lot. I had a lot of influences and was actually very fascinated with the whole idea of the storyline concept album. So my first two albums, Life and Death and Tip of the Sword, are both concept albums because that was kind of like really happening a lot around in that era. You know, you had like Schoolboys in Disgrace by the Kinks. You had 2112 by Rush. You had, you know, The Who's Tommy and Quadrophenia. All those, you know, all those great albums that were complete stories from beginning to end. So I like to write that kind of stuff, and I still might do it again. Dark Waters really is more a collection of individual songs, though. That's this last album that I did.
So where were your detours? I mean, because you started out, as you said, back then it was harder in some ways, easier in other ways to get attention, right? Because now it's easier to put your work out there, but it's so glutted with everybody doing it that you kind of have to find your niche and find your way. In those days, though, you really had to either have a lot of money to independently put it out or get the attention of a record producer and a record company to get a deal. So what were some of the things you did back then that you don't do now and you're doing differently today?
Well, I've always been more of a composer than a performer. So, you know, in you know, my early years, I did play in a bunch of bands, and you know, that was always fun, but it wasn't really a big focus for me. And unless you lived in like New York City or LA or something, if you lived out in, you know, the boonies in Connecticut, which is where I grew up, there really isn't anything for you. And breaking into the music business really means being being a band that plays in clubs, you know. But if you're going to go and try to, like, get a record deal or whatever, you have to, like, you know, go to Los Angeles or San Francisco or one of the, you know, Austin today. But, you know, back in those days, that's what you had to do, you know. And my life didn't bring me there. So I didn't have that opportunity. So I just played and I did my thing. And then, you know, responsibilities and things took over and it kind of faded away. And then I didn't do anything with music for many years and then went back to it. Probably, I want to say, in the mid-2000s, like 2003, 2004 is when I really started picking it up again and bringing up all this old stuff that... Oh, go ahead. No, I'm sorry.
I was just gonna say, that's very interesting to me because we have a lot of listeners who are, you know, career changers, midlife issues. They say, hey, you know, it's too late to do things, too late to embrace your dreams. And when somebody like you comes along and says, hey, maybe it's not so late. You know, maybe it isn't too late to do it. But what drew you? Why did you decide at that point it's a good time to go back and revisit it? Because it was easier access, or you just had this pull, creative pull?
Well, I've always like loved music and listening to it, playing it, recording it, writing it. I accidentally, it actually happened by accident because I bought a sound card, and in the sound card package came a free version of Cubase, which is Steinberg's recording software. And I'm like, oh, man, I can put this on my computer, and it just sparked this whole new thing for me. So I started playing with that and thought, gee, you know, I could go and re-record my stuff again. So over a couple of years, I you know, kind of built a little studio, little digital studio, and then started, you know, playing with it and learning how to use the software, and, you know, on and on. And eventually I got to where I felt confident and competent enough to actually redo something complete and put it out there. And also because, you know, things like TuneCore came along, which allowed me to just take my album and put it on iTunes and everything else I wanted to put it on without having to have anybody give me permission.
Right.
So I could do that. No, go ahead. I'll talk through the whole interview.
That's the part of the easier access that we were talking about, the idea that people can really put their work out there and find an audience. You do have to sort of, you know, cut through the crowd to get there, but how do you find it doing? You obviously work social media quite well, I think, and you put out, I think you have a free album offer. Are those the kind of things that you do to try to attract attention? What other things do you do?
Well, that's pretty much it. I mean, you know, I don't perform out. I just like write music and, you know, compose it and record it and put it out there for people to listen to if they want to listen to it. For me, it's more important to get it out there. You know, I mean, I don't want it to die on the vine. You know, so if I can get it out there and just, you know, even if a handful of people listen to it and love it, that's great. If more, then that's even better. But at least I did it. You know, I put it out there, and the internet has allowed me to do that. All of this technology has allowed me and anybody else, either if you just have an acoustic guitar and you just want to sing and play into a microphone and put it out there, you can. If you want to do an elaborate programmed thing that sounds like a whole band, that song we just played is all me. It's programmed drums, programmed bass. I play the guitars. I do the vocals. There's no band, you know. But, you know, the drums are digital sampled. It sounds like drums, you know. Anybody can do anything they want now. And but the double-edged sword is that there's 500 million people doing it.
Right, exactly.
You know. So how do you,
you have to try
how
to stand
do you
out.
Rise
yeah, exactly.
up? Well, all you can do is just work all of the online social media, online marketing. You know, if you have no budget, you know, then you have to set up a website and hope that people will get on your mailing list so you can do what I do. And I just mail you, you know, one song every 3 or 4 days with the lyrics and a buy now button at the bottom. You know, I'm hoping that, you know, that's going to, you know, eventually over time grow and blossom into some, you know, real revenue. But it's really not about the money. I'm a consultant. I do online marketing and computer programming and stuff on my day job. So that's where, you know, I put food on the table. This is
you have a leg up, though. You have a leg up in the marketing end of things because you kind of know what to do in other spheres that you've kind of translated.
It's really complicated.
Your own career.
Yeah, it's a lot of moving parts in online marketing. It's not constantly changing. And I offer those services in my business, but for musicians, it's kind of a little bit of a different approach you have to take, but not much. I mean, you can just take traditional marketing and and do whatever you can with zero or money or low budget and just get it out there.
When you're giving things for free, I just want to say this to listeners, it's great that you get the songs for free or some of the songs for free, but sometimes it's good, if you like what you're hearing, to support the artist and go ahead and, pay a little money for the downloaded album. I think that's an important thing to do because people just get used to getting stuff for free and they don't necessarily value it as much as they should or realize the kind of work that goes into it. So just a little plug for you and other musicians and writers and everybody else. I mean, giving away free is nice, but sometimes it's good to realize the amount of work that goes into it and to pay the artists pay them their due. And everybody going the indie route, it's really up to them to, you're counting on that support.
We're living in a completely different world now where, and it's really unfortunate, but like when I was growing up, you went out and you like bought an album and it was like the one album. You just bought that one album and you put it on your turntable and you listened to it over and over and and over again until you really got super, super familiar with it. You really knew the nuances and all the emotions and the things that were happening in the music. Today, people are just going, create me a station around Disturbed. And then they'll just, like, listen to a bunch of songs by people they may have heard of or may not have ever heard of. They might be familiar with a song, not even know the band name, unless they look on their phone. And it's a completely different world.
So great to get those record albums and actually look at the album art, hold it, all that stuff. You don't really do that anymore. Although vinyl, they say, is making a comeback, but it's not really as widespread as it was.
Well, vinyl is making a comeback, but it does have bandwidth issues in terms of lower end. We have a lot more frequency ranges today than they did back then. So you have to be careful how you have to actually mix for vinyl. That's something a lot of people don't know. But or you have to master special copies for vinyl so that it doesn't bleed out, and cause all kinds of rumbling and stuff on your turntable. But it's just a different world, and I think that people today forget that all that great music that they can listen to, say, create me a station on Pandora or whatever, that's gonna go away if nobody buys music.
Exactly.
It's just gonna go away anymore.
Right. Yeah.
There's not going to be any to buy.
You got to support it. You got to support it.
Ultimately,
believes that because, as you said, there's so many people wanting to get in there, wanting to get their break, wanting to get whatever. Now, of course, a lot of people now, most artists, make their money by touring because that's really the way it is. You're not interested in doing that, but you are a composer, so you could sell your songs and make money that way to other artists who are willing to tour. Are you interested in doing that? Have you done that in the past, or is that something you want to consider?
I have all of my music is available on Snapfish. I believe that's the service through CD Baby. So it can be picked up for TV shows, video games, commercials, whatever anybody wants to use it for. So I have this like special kind of blanket license thing. When you publish through CD Baby, you can say like I'll make all of my stuff available through Snapfish, and then these producers and the managers of these giant libraries of music that are used in all this media, they will go and like look for stuff and search, by keyword of the genre or the feel or whatever, and they listen to stuff and they'll use it. You don't even know what's happening until you get paid. There's no permission. You're already giving them permission, so it could end up at the end of a major motion picture. You don't know.
That's right. Well, that's good, because then if you get paid for that, that's some nice coinage for you, right?
Well, somebody used one of my songs in France for something. I don't know what it was, but I got like $49. I was like, wow, that's really funny.
I write books, and it's always fun to get royalties from, the Netherlands or Japan. I'm like, well, it's not translated. Are they reading it in English? Okay, I'll take it.
Right. Every little bit helps.
Absolutely. Are there artists that you'd like to see, particularly since you don't want to go out performing yourself for the most part? Are there artists that you'd like to? Do you have anybody in mind that you think would be great that you'd like to pitch a song to, or would have on a wish list that you'd like to see perform some of your songs?
I couldn't even answer that question. I've never given that any thought. People ask me who do you think you sound like, and I say Jerry Butha. I don't know. I don't really think in those terms. I'm not like trying to be anybody or be anybody else. I mean, I sent you three songs. They're completely three distinctly different types of music, and that's the way it is for me. I write really its form follows function. The song has to really emphasize the emotion of what the lyrics are trying to say. So if it's a powerful, you know, album like Life and Death, it's all heavy metal because of the lyrics, the content. It's a story, and it goes from birth to death. And then if you listen to Talking About California is more of a middle of the road rock album, but that's a love story. So it has, and that's a whole story from beginning to end. So, you know, it all depends on what I'm doing. So I don't really think I'm like anybody. I know who I like, and I think I'm influenced by, you know, like drummers like Neil Peart. When I write my drum parts, I imagine I have four limbs going that I can't actually physically do. And then, you know, like, what would he hit here and what would he do there? And I programmed, and I can actually play the drums, not like Neil, but I can actually play, so it helps to program when you know physically what a drummer can do. So, but, yeah, I mean, I don't know who I would say, oh, hey, listen to my music and buy it. You know, I don't know, or use it. You know, I don't know. That's a hard question.
So
I'll have
to
think of it for the next interview.
Now, you said you like the concept albums. Do things just come to you fully formed, the idea of doing, Life and Death or Tip of the Sword, or does it sort of evolve organically? How does it work for you?
Well, Life and Death is really interesting, and I'll try to tell the short story version of it. But I was working as a computer operator in Mayapack, New York, and 2 o'clock in the morning, I just had this, like, idea, and I sat down in front of the computer, and I wrote the entire lyrics of the entire album in one sitting. It just came to me, like it came through me. And I really believe that for a lot of artists, you get this kind of connection to source and it just comes through you, you know. And it did. I mean, I still have all of the side, you know, the paper, the wide paper with the little dot holes down the sides. I still have those original computer printouts from 1983, I don't know, when I actually wrote it. And I wrote the entire album music around those lyrics. So that just came to me out of nowhere. I don't know. I don't really think about it a lot. You know, I just once I sit down, it's just like I open the faucet and I allow it to happen. So.
And do you have a disciplined schedule that you follow? Because you, as you said, you have another job that you're also doing. Do you sit down and say, I'm going to work X number of hours a day or a week, or do you just wait until the muse hits you and you just go to town then?
Well, right now I'm doing a lot of lyric videos. Every song I've done so far are going up on YouTube with the studio, you know, the studio quality song in the background with the lyrics coming at you as they're being sung, which is kind of cool. And then I'm planning on starting a new album, brand new, not old stuff, completely brand new. And then that's probably in a couple of months. But I have 3 nights a week that I stay late. My studio is set up in my office, in my commercial office, and so which is convenient. And I just will stay those 3 nights, and I'll start working on the new album when the time comes. But right now, when I stay late at night at work, I work on the videos and stuff. So, but that I do. I have a specific schedule that I follow. This is my time to do my art, and the rest is work.
And it has to, you know, so that, because a lot of people think, and, you know, we have these discussions all the time with artists of all types, and I always try to tell my listeners, my clients, people I work with, that it's not as airy-fairy as it seems. I mean, all that stuff, I totally believe what you just said, and I agree with it, and it's happened to me, but it doesn't always work that way, where it just sort of comes to you. You do sometimes have to kind of cajole it. You do have to work it, and just showing up at the page or the studio or wherever your workspace is, I think is a real helpful thing. So to hear somebody say, yeah, you know, I'm carving out those 3 nights, and I have to try to make something happen. Now, obviously, some nights are going to work are probably better than others, right, in terms of output.
Well, yeah, and it also the environment that you set up for yourself. You know, when I had my studio at home, I hardly went in there, even though I wanted to, because it was, you know, like I wanted to binge watch Breaking Bad or something, you know. So, you know,
yep.
I mean, you have to be disciplined. In anything that you do, you have to have discipline, and you have to keep forging ahead no matter what. Keep moving forward, because my philosophy in life is you can never fail until you quit. So you just have to keep going forward and not worry about what doesn't happen. Just worry about what is happening, you know, because you got, you know, it's a journey of 1,000 miles, but it's only one step at a time. You just have to keep doing it. And you have to give yourself a discipline that says, I'm going to sit down and work on this at this time.
Exactly. That's a great philosophy, and I think it's one that obviously has proven that it works for you and so many other people. So, Jerry, what are you up to now? You're doing the videos, as you said. You're getting ready for a new album. If people want to get more information about you, you have a website, yes? Give us the website.
Oh, yeah, I've got everything. Yeah, but it's jerrybootopmusic.com. You want me to spell that? It's probably a good idea. It's jerrybootopmusic.com. And from there,
okay,
you can find my Facebook, my YouTube, my Twitter, and everything. It's all available. The site is social media friendly, and, you know, it's actually responsive, so you can actually look at it on a phone or a tablet or a big screen, you know.
Very cool. And I will post it for you on my Facebook and Twitter, too, so people can see it and can access it. I wish you the best. Very interesting.
Thank you.
Background you have, an interesting sound. We're going to leave you with another song. This one, talking about California. You want to give us a setup for that?
Say, you mean like the backstory?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's just basically, you know, it's a song about, like, taking off with your girlfriend to California. That's pretty much
okay.
It. You know?
Good,
it's
good
part
enough,
of the story.
Fair enough, and what
yeah,
more do you,
it's
actually,
part of a long,
what more do you
long
need?
Story. Right, well, it's kind of a longer story, you know, and it without telling, I don't want to, you know, there's not enough time to tell the whole story, so. But it's a cool song, I think. I think it's a cool song.
It is a cool song. Jerry Bootop, thank you so much for joining us. I wish you the best. Come back and see us
thank
again,
you.
Okay?
All right,
thank
yes,
you.
I will.
Jerry
Thanks. Bye.
Talking about California with Jerry Bootop on the Amy Beth Orkin Show. about California. Jerry Boutat on the Amy Beth Arkowi Show, an interesting and innovative musician and composer. Find out more at his website, jerrybutamusic.com. As I said, I will post that link for you on our Twitter and Facebook feeds. And from the Twitter feed today, Nixie says, hey, like his philosophy, like Jerry's philosophy and sound? Very interesting. Thanks, AB. Well, thank you, Nixie. Reach out to Twitter or if you're listening live on Friday, 347-857-4505 gets you into the conversation on the telephone if anybody wants to speak to us live. So headed up north to Toronto, where embattled Mayor Rob Ford is finally heading to rehab. He was caught with a crack pipe, so I guess he finally said, let's do it. Remember when he just said he overate and drank a little too much? He's taking it seriously now, apparently, into rehab, so look, we wish him the best. Let's hope he gets the help he can get and needs. He's easy to lampoon, but he's got a serious problem, or problems for sure. My problem with him is he should get out of politics right now. He's just not ready to serve, yet he's defiant. He's still running for re-election. He was stripped by most of his duties 6 or 7 months ago anyway, but he's still running for re-election, and I guess he's in a tight three-way race. In the lead is a more liberal contender, a woman who's running. I don't know her name. Olivia something? I forget the name. I'm sorry. I'm not well-versed in Canadian politics. And they have another man who's more conservative or just as conservative as Ford, who's billing himself as the same policies and politics but without all the baggage. But Ford is running in second place. Frankly, regardless of the politics, and I don't know much about it and where anybody stands on any of the issues, the man is not equipped to serve at this point, and he really should bow out. I don't understand these politicians. You get a job to do. If you were working in an industry in the private sector, you might get a leave of absence. They might allow you to have some time in rehab. But at some point, you would have to step away from that job, and you might not get paid, and you might not get the bennies because you can't perform your job. That's the problem. So I think he should go, but we'll find out more. I think I saw one Canadian reporter was on a talk show the other day and said that the woman whose name eludes me, and I apologize, who's running against him, is considered Canada's version or Canada's equivalent of Hillary Clinton. But she couldn't figure out, nobody could figure out who America's equivalent of Rob Ford is. It's kind of reminiscent of Marion Barry. Remember the former Washington, D.C. mayor who went to jail, actually, for cocaine possession, and he had some drug use issues and crack smoking and all that, and he was reelected years later. But he did eventually get help and then came back and got reelected. So I'm not saying Rob Ford doesn't have a future, but maybe right now is not the time. Tony nominations came out, too, as we – this is a very awkward switch of the gears, but even more awkward if you start playing Doris Day, which we are. Hey, it's going to be an interesting race. I don't know. I've seen a few of these shows. I haven't seen a lot of them, but I will tell you that the Best Actress category looks like the toughest one to beat. It does feature the Best Actress in a Play. Tyne Daly, Mothers and Sons, what a magnificent job she did in that. Latonya Richardson-Jackson, Raisin in the Sun. Cherry Jones, another magnificent performance, which I saw at the Glass Menagerie. Audrey McDonald, Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. And Estelle Parsons in The Velocity of Autumn. That is a tough race, for sure. The leading actor in a play, Samuel Barnett for Twelfth Night. Bryan Cranston, I think he's the favorite for All the Way. But he's got competition. Chris O'Dowd of Mice and Men. Mark Rylance for Richard III. And Tony Shalhoub, Act One. So we'll see what happens there. The musicals, of course. The best plays. The nominees are Act One, All the Way, Cassé Valentina, that's Harvey Fierstein's latest, Mother and Sons, the great Terrence McNally play, which stars Tyne Daly, and Outside Mullinger, which is the latest from John Patrick Shanley, the Pulitzer Prize winner for Doubt, and the Oscar winner for Moonstruck, by the way, as well. Best musical, After Midnight, Aladdin, Beautiful, the Carole King musical, and A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, a show which my sister and I saw. We didn't see the show, but we saw ads for it and discount tickets for it some months back, and didn't know what the heck it was about. Now it's nominated. We're probably going to get shut out again like we did with Pinky Boots. So you see, you got to go when you got to go. Seize the day. That'll teach you. We'll see what happens. The Tony Awards are awarded early June, I think. So we'll see. Thank you, Jackman. And Neil Patrick Harris, who is the perennial host, I don't think he's hosting this year, I think it's Hugh Jackman, is nominated as for his role in Hedwig and The Angry Inch. So we'll see what happens. Always love a live performance. If you get a chance to see it, do it in New York or anywhere, regional theaters as well, local theaters. It's an exciting experience. missed our timing on the Lullaby of Broadway.
The milkman's on his way. Sleep tight, baby. Sleep tight. Let's call it a day. It's a lullaby for Broadway.
The late, the great, not late, the great Doris Day in A Lullaby of Broadway, indeed. Check it out. If you can, the Tony Awards coming up in June, and the show's going strong. Broadway's another tough, they always say theater's dead, but it's not. It's going strong, and it's going strong probably in your backyard. There are all kinds of local theaters, regional theaters, community theaters to investigate should you not be able to get to the Great White Way. So, are you a coffee drinker or a tea drinker or both? I'm kind of both. And if you are looking, if your quest is for that perfect cup of tea, we have the gadget for you, a machine from a British outfit, which costs, apparently will cost, £7,700. That's $13,000 US. Thank you very much. Is said to make the perfect cup of tea. The company Baikun is behind the machine. It says the brewing process is a lot more complicated than just simply dipping a tea bag into some boiling water. That's been working for centuries, but okay. They say that they are sending out prototypes in various U.S. coffee shops, and the device could be commercially available later this year if anybody wants it. The craft brewer relies on a novel process of brewing called reverse atmospheric infusion. It uses a brewing chamber into which loose tea leaves and water are placed. The air is then drawn out to create a vacuum. The process is repeated between 60 and 90 seconds. The different flavors will need different numbers of infusion cycles, they say, and variables like water temperature and contact time can be fine-tuned. The machine can brew more than 60 cups of tea per hour, and the tea makers are boasting that they have created tea 2.0. So there you have it. I don't know. Dipping the tea bag in water always worked for me. I like the Twinings Black Currant Tea and Bigelow's Constant Comment. Those are my favorites, and it tastes just fine to me. So I think I'll skip the $13,000 and just make it the old-fashioned way, if it's all right with you. And I want to save some money anyway because I might want to pick up an old tour bus. Yeah, Willie Nelson's tour bus, a 1983 Eagle. It gets eco-friendly 7 miles per gallon when the generator is running. You know, he runs it on old French fries, right? It's got crushed velvet curtains, and just in case, just to guess, though, a few dozen places to hide your weed. Willie Nelson's old tour bus is up for sale. It's listed on Craigslist. And I'm not sure how many miles it has on it, but the representative says that based on the number of calls they've already gotten from the ad, they probably priced the bus too low, but they have no plans to raise the price. It stays at $29,999, a figure they arrived at by comparing it to other buses of the same make and the year already on the market. And the representative says the owner doesn't exactly need the money. That's Willie Nelson. But just so you know, no extra charge for the smell, which you won't be able to get away from. I'm sure it'll be rather marijuana-rific, if you know what I mean. But if you want to buy Willie Nelson's tour bus, you probably want to take in the aroma. So you heard about the kerfuffle between Edie Brickell and Paul Simon, the married singer-songwriters up in Connecticut earlier this week. It sounds like it was much ado about nothing, but apparently they had a fight in their house, and someone called 911 and hung up. It turns out, I thought maybe it was one of their kids. It turned out it was Edie Brickell's mother, who I guess came in on them having this very, you know, vitriolic fight, and there was some pushing and shoving, but no injuries reported. So they wound up in court in Norwalk, and I guess they got a summons. They're going to come back sometime in May. May 13th, 14th, something like that, and probably the charges will be dismissed. They were both charged with disorderly conduct. They say they're fine, everything's fine, nothing to see here, and just to make sure people are aware of that, they promptly released a duet yesterday, and it's kind of nice. It's called I'd Like to Get to Know You, Edie Brickell and Paul Simon. Give a listen on the Amy Beth Arcoe Show.
You share my home, you share my kids and my dog, but I swear I don't
Isn't that a beauty? Eddie Brickell, Paul Simon, I'd like to get to know you again. I like that line about looking at the other couples on the grocery line, see what's in their baskets. So we're hoping that kerfuffle was much ado about nothing. Nothing to see here. Go home, folks. But what a great song indeed. Talk about the quick digital turnaround that we were discussing with Jerry earlier. It's so easy to get your music out there now if you want the world to hear it. And certainly the world wants to hear from Paul Simon and Eddie Brickell. So, hey, if you want to be a guest on the show, by the way, we are booking. It looks like we're pretty well booked for May and June, but there may be a slot or two here and there. Trudy has been busy with the big book. Feel free. We're always looking for musicians and theater folks, authors, filmmakers, social commentators. Head over to the website, amybetharkawi.com. Tell us about your story, and we'll see what we can do about getting you on the show, which MediaBytes has dubbed a top podcast and says it's an empowering, entertaining tour de force, and we try our best to live up to it. Also, great to note that our show we did last Monday with Tony Quantro, the noted cabaret singer and philanthropist who wrote that great memoir, Ethel Merman, Mother Teresa and Me, has been chosen by ArtsWire as a top pick. So thank you so much to the folks at ArtsWire. We appreciate it because, again, you know, you're trying to get yourself noticed in a glut of podcasts. It's great to be singled out from time to time. We do appreciate it. So if you want to get on board with a show that has been growing our audience and our attention, we certainly want to showcase your stories. We're always interested in the artistic process. We will be talking next Friday. I think we're off on Monday, unless something major comes up. Next Friday, we have Joe Mader, the former rock and roll DJ, the Rock and Roll Madam, will join us. She's written a very powerful memoir about helping her mother cope with Alzheimer's. It's called When I Married My Mother, and she has a novel out, I think, too. We're going to talk with her next Friday. I'm a big show. It looks like June is going to be music month. We got lots of singer-songwriters to introduce you to, including a couple of fan faves. Pete Kennedy and Doug Briney are coming back in June. So all of that and maybe you in the mix as well. Inspiration to Action shout-outs. Today, Neil in Cranston, Rhode Island contacts us again. I think we've heard from Neil a couple of times. He says, I'm doing some photography. It's going great. Finally got myself some gallery space. All right, Neil, good for you. And he says, thank you for getting me going again way back when in September with the challenge, one of the earlier ones to sign on, I think. I guess you were, Neil. And I'm so happy for you. Hey, if the Inspiration to Action Challenge has worked for you or is working for you, you'd like a shout-out, I'd love to give you one. Reach out to the website as well. If you haven't started it yet or you're kind of stumbling along, kind of figure out what's it all about, I will walk you through it. In a simple process, get yourself a journal and just start writing things that inspire you, things that you bring you joy and things for which you are grateful, and then we'll put together some goals and action plans for those goals. But get in touch, and I will walk you through it. Via the website, amybetharkawi.com. While you're there, stop by and pick up a cozy read for the weekend or for the favorite mystery lover in your life. My stories, the Eliza Gordon Mystery Series, both Killing Time and Dead Silent, are now available for ebook and paperback, so get your copy today and enjoy the weekend. A lot of things happening this weekend. They have the White House Correspondents' Dinner. What's the guy, Joel Hale? Is that his name, McHale? The guy from Community, is that it? Yeah, I don't know. I think that's who it is, right? Joel McHale, yeah. He will be doing the presentation, joining the ranks of people like Conan O'Brien, Bill Maher, Jon Stewart, Jay Leno, who've done it in seasons past. It's becoming a Hollywood deal. It's got Hollywood and, you know, spotting stars and all of that thing. And CNN this year, I think for the first time, will be having live coverage of the Correspondents' Dinner. In past years, I think MSNBC has had it. They may have it as well. So if you're inclined, it's tomorrow night. And we'll probably do a little wrap-up about it. Well, we're not going to be here on Monday, so we may not bother giving a wrap-up next week, but we may. You never know. You never know. The other thing that's happening this weekend, of course, it's about a couple of minutes and then it's over. It's the Kentucky Derby. And we'll see. They've got the front runner is California Chrome. Is that the right name? Wicked Strong is the sentimental favorite horse owned by people in Massachusetts, and some of the proceeds of the horse's winnings go to benefit the victims of the Boston bombing. And there's a female jockey who's trying to be the first female jockey to win, and two veteran jockeys who have won four times, and they're trying to be one of the few people to make it have five victories under their belt. So lots to look forward to. The coverage, I think, begins like 2 or 3 hours before the thing takes off on TV. NBC has it. And they do a lot of backstories on the horses, if you're interested in that, human interest stories on the trainers and the jockeys and all of that, which is interesting. And I guess a lot of people watching and hat watching. That's the place to look for crazy hats and outfits and mint julep drinking. That's what the Run for the Roses is all about. It's the first leg of the very famous Triple Crown. do a little send up. Do that Saturday in Kentucky with Dan Fogelberg and Run for the Roses.
Too long, my love's too strong, let you go. never knowing what will grow. Kentucky rain keeps pouring down, and up ahead's another town that I'll go walking through with the rain in my shoes. Some old gray-bearded men sitting on a bench outside a general store. They said, yes, she's been here, but their memory wasn't clear. Was it yesterday? No, wait, the day before. Finally got a ride with a preacher man who asked, were you bound on such a cold, dark afternoon? As we drove on through the rain, as he listened, I explained, and he left me with a prayer that I'd find you. Kentucky rain keeps pouring down, and up ahead's another town that I'll go walking through with the rain in my shoes.
Rain on Derby Day. Elvis on the Internet Darkly Show, and of course that duty from Dan Fogelberg's Run for the Roses. We'll see what happens on the 140th Run for Those Roses tomorrow. And what else is going on? Oh, my picks of the week on TV. I've got to say I'm going with Black Box, that new show on ABC. I didn't think I would like it. It got really bad reviews. Watched it last week. It was pretty good. But last night, it really is quite good. It's about a neurologist who's also bipolar, and they have interesting cases, kind of reminiscent of House, some bizarre cases, but also her backstory and her life. It's interesting. I think it's done quite well. Kelly Riley is the star. Vanessa Redgrave plays her psychiatrist. I think it has promise. I'm not sure where it stands in the future. We'll see. As next month, or next week, I think, next couple of weeks, they're gonna, between May 12th and May 15th, the networks unveil their shows for the next season, and USA Today always has their Save Our Shows poll. Gratified to see a couple of my faves on the top of the list. The top show that people want to save, Law & Order SVU, with 46%, followed by NBC's Parenthood with 45%, and ABC's Nashville with 41%. Now, SVU, apparently, it's more of an issue of the demo getting older, skewing older, and also there's a contractual kerfuffle with Dick Wolf, the creator. So that may be a problem with the final franchise in the Law & Order dynasty. I'm hoping Parenthood and Nashville hang in there. That's for sure. I really do. The bottom of the barrel shows that people wanted to see Axe, Dads, Mixology, and Beauty and the Beast, shows I have to say I have never seen, so I can't comment. Also like The Millers, that I think that's safe. Margot Martindale, Beau Bridges, and Will Arnett. What a funny sitcom that is on Thursday evenings on CBS. And Mad Men, which, of course, we're three episodes into the bifurcated final season, so we only have four to go, and it is really hitting its stride. The first one kind of stumbled. The second two, really good. Betty finally made it into the mix this week, this past week. And what can I say? I mean, the acting is spot on with January Jones, and the writing, Matthew Weiner, is certainly a genius at developing characters with just a few lines, a few details, a few scenes. So without giving anything away for those who have yet to watch it, I will just say that her maternal instincts are on par with those of Kate Gosselin's. We'll see what happens. I don't know. There's only four episodes to go, and I'm going to really miss it, because usually when they have like 13 or 14 episodes, you're just getting into it when it's over. So we'll see. But it's on again this week. Hope it keeps going as strong as it's been for the last couple of episodes. And then we'll see how they wrap it up next year.
My DVD pick of the week is Philomena, starring Dame Judi Dench. It's based on a true story about a woman who 50 or so years before was forced to give up her out-of-wedlock baby by these very cruel nuns, and she had it adopted, and then years later she wanted to try to find him, and she did find him. It's based on a true story, tracked it down with the help of a journalist, played very aptly by Steve Coogan. I don't want to give away exactly what happened, but you'll find out. A couple of sentimental spots, but there's humor in it, there's pathos. It's a very good movie, and I think worth the watch. So that one's available now for DVD and Blu-ray. So go out there and watch it if you so choose. So there you have it for my picks of the week. I hope you have a great weekend, whatever you do, wherever you go. Drive safe, play nice, dream big. Come back, visit us again on the Amy Beth Arkwee Show. Thank you so much to Trudy and Aurora and MLTCS headquarters. We'll leave you out with another one about Kentucky, Neil Diamond and Kentucky Woman. Catch you next week. Take care.
Kentucky woman, she shine with her own kind of light. She look at you once in a day, that's all wrong, that's all right. And I love her, God knows I love her. Kentucky woman, she gets to know you, she goes to own you. Kentucky woman, ain't the kind that gets turned at the drop of her name. Something inside that you've got turns you on just the same. And she loves me, God knows she loves me. Kentucky woman, she gets to know you, she goes to own you. Kentucky woman, much good love there beneath my feet, gentle touch from that one girl, and life is sweet and good, ain't no doubt. I'm talking about Kentucky woman, she gets to know you, she goes to own you. Kentucky woman, one girl.
And girls, I would like to take everybody in this entire audience out for milk and cookies. There are buses outside. Everybody, follow me.